eat. Enjoy a bit of this Above Majestic.
Freedom is a heavy load, a great, strange burden for the spirit to undertake. It is not easy. It is not a gift given, but a choice made. And the choice made may be a hard one. The road goes upwards towards the light, but the laden traveler may never reach the end of it. Man approaches the unattainable truth through a succession of errors. Affliction comes to us, not to make us sad, but sober. Not to make us sorry, but wise. You will be required to do wrong no matter where you go. It is the basic condition of life to be required to violate your own identity. At some point, every creature which lives must do so. It is the ultimate shadow, the defeat of creation. This is the curse at work, the curse that feeds on all life, everywhere in the universe. The gravest error a thinking person can make is to believe that one particular version of history is absolute fact. History is recorded by a series of observers, none of whom are impartial. It is change, continuing change, inevitable change, that is the dominant factor in society today. No sensible decision can be made any longer without taking into account not only the world as it is, but the world as it will be. The saddest aspect of life right now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom. Each generation imagines itself to be more intelligent than the one that went before it, and wiser than the one that came after it. Man is the unnatural animal, the rebel child of nature, and more does he turn himself against the harsh and fitful hand that reared him. It doesn't matter what you do, so as long as you change something from the way it was before you touched it, into something that's like you after you take your hands away. The very concept of truth is fading out of this world. And lies will pass into history. Solitude, isolation, are painful things and beyond human endurance. For small creatures such as we, the vastness is bearable only through love.
Trinity, bones to philosophy, but milk to faith, which has wise serpents diversely, most slipperiness, yet most entanglings hath, as you distinguished undistinct, by power, love, knowledge be, give me such self-different instinct, of these let me elemented be, of power to love, to know you, a number three.
People cried. When the Trinity nuclear test was done and Robert Oppenheimer said, "We have done this before," he was speaking from an informed perspective. In the ancient Hindu text, the Bhagavad Gita, there is a reference to a bolt of iron charged with the light of 1,000 suns. It describes radiation sickness. It describes elephants screaming and dying. It describes the shadows that are left on the ground after the blast goes off. All things that we're now very familiar with in the nuclear age. The same culture that described what appeared to be the use of a modern nuclear weapon also was describing things like anti-gravity craft that flew through the air with no sound called Vimanas. These craft could pass right through a mountain, and they also used some sort of particle beam weapons. You have human-looking beings that are larger than the rest of us and have blue skin, like Krishna, and they also have extraordinary abilities. And in addition to that, you have weird reptilian beings called Rakshasas, who are also codenamed snakes. And these beings clearly appear to be of a reptilian nature. This even goes to the point that you still to this day have temples in India in which there are people called Nagas who have a human-like top, but then from the waist down, they literally have a snake's body. All of this stuff takes on a much different investigative hue once we look at the fact that the actual record of what we now know a nuclear bomb looks and acts like is dutifully recorded in these Hindu scriptures. So Oppenheimer was aware that this weapon unleashed a fury unlike anything we'd ever seen before. Prior to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the scientists were the rock stars. Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, Marconi, Tesla. These were the rock stars. These were the people who made our lives so exciting that we went from essentially a primitive situation where in order to have food preserved, we have to have an ice box where literally pieces of ice are covered with sawdust, to now we have electric refrigerators. We have electric lights so we can read at night. We have thoughts being beamed wirelessly by radio, and then eventually even pictures through television. This was so exciting. People could travel, transcontinental railroad. All these things were coming out that had never happened before. A private automobile without the need for horses. And then all of a sudden, the nuclear explosion shows that technology hit a screaming brick wall. We could not trust any longer that our toys would be the instruments of our enlightenment. They could actually be the instruments of our destruction.
Loading these nuclear weapons ended up basically acting as beacons to a number of ET races in our general area. The primary energy pulse that occurs in one of these explosions sends an energy that feeds back through the fabric of space-time. All stars, all planets are connected through electromagnetic filaments. Scientists call these connections the cosmic web. It looks like a giant spider web all throughout the cosmos. When a nuclear explosion occurs, it sends a feedback through this cosmic web. This is a problem because these extraterrestrials not only communicate through this cosmic web, but they actually travel through it from star to star. Therefore, when we detonated these devices, we sent out a signal saying not only are we at a certain level of advancement, but we're not at a certain level of advancement spiritually.
Oppenheimer's key quotes revealed that he did not know what the effect of the detonation of the nuclear bomb would be. When they conducted the Trinity test, they were unaware as to whether or not this explosion would create a chain reaction that could actually destroy the whole Earth. And yet they proceeded forward because they believed that this weapon was the only way they could end World War II, and thus the ends justified the means.
With how potent and how powerful these technologies can be, we can never expect to be able to handle them if we operate them from a low consciousness. When you raise your individual consciousness, when you actually make the effort to become more aware of an individual, that has a mirrored effect to society. It's the law of correspondence, as above, so below. So when you become more conscious of an individual, that makes society itself raise in consciousness. And when each one of us, every single one of us, begins making ourselves more aware, society itself is going to become more aware.
Multiple insiders with credible military and corporate backgrounds have said that extraterrestrial spacecraft have appeared over nuclear missile installations and have completely powered them down.
I'd first like to briefly describe the incident that I experienced in March 1967. At that time, I was a first lieutenant, U.S. Air Force, stationed at Malmstrom Air Force Base, Montana. I was trained and assigned duties as a missile launch officer for the Minuteman I intercontinental ballistic missile. We had operational control over 10 Minuteman nuclear missiles. On the evening of March 24, 1967, while my commander was on a scheduled rest break, I received the first of two phone calls. The first call was to report unidentified lighted objects flying above the facility.
Well, they were hovering above the nuclear silos, and what was happening was they didn't attack the nuclear silos. All they did was shut down. Captain Robert Salas had like 8 nuclear tip ICBMs, and they all got shut down in rapid succession. And these systems have triple redundancy backup systems. The guards up topside were with their weapons drawn, with a glowing red saucer above the silo, and then the UFO then went 60 miles to the other base and shut down their nuclear missiles as well. This has happened more than once. This happened in Brent Waters in the UK as well.
What most people haven't heard came to me from two insiders. Bob Dean and Pete Peterson were both of them independently told me that in the year 1990, all of the nuclear warheads in the U.S. and in the USSR completely melted down, became radioactively inert, and even the missiles themselves would just sputter around and wouldn't even fly a straight trajectory anymore. Right during this same time that all of these nuclear missiles were literally melted down inside the warhead, we also have this amazing formation appear on a dry lake bed in Oregon.
The Idaho National Guard has a huge mystery on its hands, and that is our top story today. During routine photo reconnaissance missions over Oregon, RF-4 jets spotted and took photographs of a huge carving in the desert over 1,000 feet across.
It has everybody talking. I mean, this is just something that, well, it chills you. Having somebody do this, it's incredibly time-consuming. A lot of expertise involved, had to take a long period of time, and maybe a lot of money. From point to point is exactly 11 and a half degrees.
Exactly.
And the outer ones, they're exactly 23 degrees apart. Exactly.
No variation.
And there's something else puzzling here, something that you do not see. You do not see tire tracks, the kind of tracks that might be made by a tractor or a plow. No tire tracks. And no footprints. In Oregon, I'm Walden Kirsch for NBC News.
The reality is that this is the same type of thing that's being done with crop circle formations, but on an even more impressive scale. And that mark was a symbolic statement from the ETs. The mandala, remember, is supposed to be a symbol of the cosmic mind, a symbol of the creator, the origin of the universe, the geometric nature of how everything unfolds. So they're giving us a message. They're showing us that they will make sure that we stay on track for this positive future that's been promised to us in over 35 different ancient cultures around the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
That's right. That's right.
So when I really think about the speech from Dwight David Eisenhower, his farewell speech about the military-industrial complex, it brings up a lot of stuff for me. I was recruited to go off-planet in 2006, and it seems to be related to the Alternative 3 scenario that relates to creating colonies off-planet and the Mars colony.
Here we go, guys. We're going off-planet 2006. This will blow your mind a little bit.
Was the planet that was being discussed during that time. And so when we hear about a warning like that, but we don't hear about the actual alternatives or agendas or ET government treaties and some of the things that were taking place, what was he really trying to say? There's so many layers to the military-industrial complex that we're starting to discover now. And I've been definitely researching and digging real deep in order to understand really what he meant. And as many have uncovered and been a whistleblower for, and just my own experience in that Mars recruitment, we discover a secret space program, this multi-level shadow government with compartmentalism, things that happen after the Second World War and the infiltration coming in from Project Paperclip to the American government, MKUltra having so many branches. So it's like, okay, here's a warning about the misplaced power that exists and will persist if we as an American people don't start to become empowered, which is basically what I got from it. I could feel a lot of pride in a lot of my family members about that speech. But I would say that I'm a family member that has, I think, recognized some layers that were not brought to my attention growing up, that I've been able to sort of share with them. And again, there's compartmentalism. The NSA signed something in 1947 that made it legal, like a law, that you couldn't disclose this sort of stuff without massive ramifications. And here we are in this particular window, without oaths being signed by many of us, with more freedom of speech and more of an ability to bring light to all of this. And that's why the speech is really relevant, because it rings true to today. Those warnings are something that we're beginning to finally uncover.
Actually started back in 1955 with the Eisenhower administration that was forced into a treaty, somewhat of a surrender, with a Nazi faction that had been operating. The one of the witnesses that was Brigadier General Stephen Lufkin, who was on Eisenhower's staff, who was aware that he lost control to the corporations and that it would not be in the best of hands. And so once this treaty was signed, Nelson Rockefeller restructured the whole CIA MJ-12 operations. So now our legal government is no longer in the loop. They also replaced the complete MJ-12 group that was originally set up by President Truman with Alan Dulles as MJ-1, or head of the MJ-12 operations, of all people, who was highly instrumental in the Nazi infiltration. What happened was, when this happened, all of the reverse engineering operations that were Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio were moved to Area 51 and S-4, where Eisenhower realized that he had lost control when he attempted to look into it. He was denied access. A five-star general was really pissed. So he threatened to invade Area 51 with the First Army out of Colorado. And until they allowed two agents to give a report of what's going on over there. And what they found was that several craft were being reverse engineered that were extraterrestrial and German origin.
One of the ways that the Nazis obtained their advanced technology before World War II was through the use of a channeler called Maria Orsic. Maria Orsic was channeling telepathic messages from extraterrestrials that were offering her plans and schematics to actually create anti-gravity craft. Maria Orsic channeled this information for the Occult Vril Society in Germany. This information was later used by these German secret societies to build out many of their crafts. Because they were focused more on the qualitative superiority rather than the quantitative, they were more focused on having more advanced technology rather than more tanks and boots on the ground. They were losing the groundwork in Europe, but they were obtaining the more advanced technology. And to save that technology, they took it down to Antarctica pre and during World War II.
In the late 1930s, the Nazis had an expeditionary group go down to Antarctica, and they found some very interesting things. They found a region under the ice that was created by geothermal heat from volcanoes, and there would be 3 miles of ice, and a few thousand feet above ground level would have been melted by the geothermal heat. And the rest of the ice acts as an insulator, causing it sort of like an igloo effect. And the dome would grow from the heat, the geothermal heat, and it would melt and run under the ice. And that was some of what was lubricating the ice and causing it to move. But underneath these areas, they were finding perfect areas to build submarine bases. So not only did the Nazis build out submarine bases, as they developed more and more of their space program, they developed out a massive spaceport. After these spaceports were developed and the Nazis had handed it over to basically the Americans began to develop more and more research and development bases in Antarctica. In the late 1950s, a treaty was signed that stated that Antarctica was only to be used for peaceful research. Well, we were basically arriving and digging giant holes under the ice in various areas and building out these giant complexes, much like I think it was called Project Iceworm back in the 1960s, where like in Greenland, the United States Army Corps of Engineers was building out an ICBM base hidden under the ice, and it was very sophisticated. I'm told that they were very similar in when they were built and how they were built to the buildings that were built in this program. Companies that were given access to these R&D bases began to develop NBC testing, they called it, nuclear, biological, chemical testing, which in the programs usually translates into them working with clones, working with different chemical compounds to affect how people develop psychologically or physiologically. So a lot of very, very dark scientific programs began to be developed down in Antarctica, and indeed are going on to this very day. One of the biggest things that the Cabal does not want us to know about are the existence of these R&D bases and the all of the horrible crimes against humanity that are occurring on these R&D bases.
On December 9th, 2015, William Tompkins released his epic book, Selected by Extraterrestrials. I became aware of it early in 2016, but it wasn't until he had conducted several interviews that he and I became friends and began speaking regularly. The story of William Tompkins is quite amazing. Here's a man who's 93 years old, and he gets hired right as he begins his military career in the Navy, working in a highly classified program for the United States government at the highest levels, where he was personally responsible for getting information from 23 different American spies who were embedded in the German secret space program, which apparently included bases in Antarctica.
A single Navy operative went into Germany. This is like 1939. He didn't believe this, but there was very strange organizations and different research groups all over, not just Germany, but in the occupied countries too. And strangely enough, Germany was putting in production fantastic vehicles. They didn't have wings on these aircraft. They didn't have empennage or tail. They had landing gears. Some of them were triangular shape. Some were rectangular shape. Some were round shape, like a saucer. And so he, being a spy for the Navy, found out all of these fantastic situations that were going on inside of Germany. And this is an important point. Instead of him going to his boss, coming back to the United States, he went directly to the Secretary of the Navy, Forrestal. Forrestal gets tapped on the shoulder. He gets told, don't select a Navy officer to head up these operatives. What? He's told to select somebody who had never been in Annapolis. Now, almost every Navy officer, whether they're of one star or lieutenant commander, they've all been through Annapolis to learn how to be a Navy officer. It turns out Forrestal is told that every book in the libraries, every book in the colleges, every book in the universities, every book on this planet is misinformation. It's misinformation. So, which is initiated by the Draco reptilians as far back as 6,000 years ago.
The reptilians really came into control and started to be able to manipulate what was going on the face of the planet about 6,000 to 7,000 years ago. It is true that they have different masking technologies to be able to be in a room and look like a human, but usually they're in underground bases in various places on the globe, as well as in a huge area in Antarctica. The southeast region has a large number of underground caverns that are kept extremely warm, too warm for humans, by geothermal heat. It's a perfect place for all of these colonies that the reptilians have. They're basically cities, huge cities with millions of them.
So, Secretary of the Navy selects Rick Abada. He's not even an American. He comes over here with his family. He goes to school here. He goes to the second year in high school. He leaves school. He joins the Navy as a third class seaman, works his way up in the Navy. Now he's a commander. Okay? That commander is selected by the Secretary of the Navy to head up all of these operatives to go back into Germany and find out what's going on. Because that individual had never had misinformation given to him about every technical field on the planet.
Everything we learn in the establishment-controlled education systems is specifically designed to program our minds away from the truth. Physics is wrong. Medicine is wrong. History is wrong. Everything we are taught in textbooks is mainly wrong. And this is done purposefully so we don't understand how to move our bodies, how to feed our bodies, what really happened in the past, what technology can really do these days. All of these things if we learn them, would help us empower ourselves, would help us actually understand what's really going on with our reality.
Now, if you were to go to San Diego and look over at North Island, you're going to see a tall building like this. There's a small office in the top of that building, which is the secret office for the Admiral. This is where the operatives come to. So the Admiral's aide comes to my barracks, taps me on the shoulder, and he only says one word: he's here. We drive over to that building, we get up to the top, we go into this conference room, a small room. Admiral Riccobata sits here, I sit here, and one of three other bosses that I have are all captains. So now I have three captains as bosses, and now a two-star admiral. He just got another raise. Wow. He just came back from Lockheed. He just came back from Scripps Institute. He just came back from all the aircraft company. Wow. Now he's got these operatives coming in. So the operative sits on the other side of the table. He discloses to us these fantastic things that Germany is doing that make no sense. Now I have eight girls and three PhDs as a group. We put together a package from what the operative brings back. Some of it is photographs. Once in a while, it's a manual, hardly any manual. A couple of manuals were not even in English, German, or any other language. They were extraterrestrial hieroglyphics. You see all of this stuff. You hear it. You understand what the Germans are doing. They didn't just get documents from the extraterrestrials. They got brand spanking new space vehicles. Here's one. Here's another one. Here's. They brought these. They take you inside. They show you how to drive it. So they put me in a secret laboratory which is designing, not flying wings like Northrop does, okay? These are just a fuselage with no wings and no tail. Half airplane, half spaceships. This is what Northrop was designing.
Our first spaceships are U.S. Navy attack class submarines.
We put together programs that went all the way out into the galaxy, not just this galaxy.
The military industrial complex, back when they were testing a lot of the technology that they had received from the Nazis after World War II, as well as from ETs, when they were testing, doing proof of concept testing, they had attached this technology to a regular submarine, and then they flew it out of our atmosphere. That was the first time that they were really able to fly a vessel out of our atmosphere using electrogravitic technology. The reason that they used a submarine was, of course, because they were self-enclosed. The crews that served on them were used to serving 6 months or more away from home, having all of their supplies with them. And they had the psychology of being able to handle those tight quarters for such a long time. The technology developed to a point to where they developed the finances, this financial schemes, to begin to build out fleets of these long cigar-shaped craft. Some of them were kilometer long or longer, and they could make them longer by putting in sections. And the sections were modular, just like in modern submarines. They could take apart the fuselage and pull out sections. It could, one of these modules could be set for like 3 or 4 months as a laboratory for a bunch of different scientific programs. And then at its next time at port, the modules are swapped out and then it's a hospital ship. the module's swapped out the next time and it's a troop transport, or it's just a long-haul freighter. So these ships are very modular, and in the beginning they were using power systems that were nuclear. Then they moved to thorium type of electrical generation, and then they moved to some sort of zero-point electrical generation. And that is what they currently use.
This is totally unreal that this happened, like in 1942 on this planet. Extraterrestrial come from who knows where out in the galaxy. Germany gets to be the country that these Draco reptilians pick out to do two types of missions. One, to remove all of the people that Hitler didn't want in his country, and every one of them around the planet. Two, to take every man, woman, and child on this planet and put them in slave factories, men, women, and children, to build and construct all these different types of Draco Navy space battle group ships. This may sound like insanity. This is what happened.
He had concluded from what these insiders were telling him that the Germans had actually made treaties with a highly aggressive and highly negative reptilian humanoid race that they've called the Saurians or the Draco. This treaty involved the Nazis actually being given workable technology that is built with our own conventional systems. They use a sort of mercury turbine, a type of mercury called red mercury. And then they are actually able to leave the Earth. They had a settlement on the moon. They had a settlement on Mars. And they were doing this stuff as early as 1939, even before World War II actually started. As you can imagine, everybody was thinking he was crazy, but yet these insiders were reporting, literally standing there, in which you have 8 foot tall, even 12 to 14 foot tall reptilian extraterrestrials, terrifying in appearance, they smell bad, actually advising the Germans on how to build this stuff in these various bases, including that in Antarctica.
Operation High Jump was an operation commissioned in 1947 that was led by Admiral Richard Byrd. And on the public level, it was said that this was a scientific exploration. But what happened was that this operation was commissioned with 33 ships, 13 aircraft, and 5,000 men. Now, this was not a scientific exploration with that many men and that many ships. What Operation High Jump actually was commissioned for was to go down to Antarctica and basically root out the Nazi installations that they had built pre and during World War II. The DC flyover was an event that occurred over successive weekends in July of 1952 in Washington, DC. And what had happened was that there was a mass sighting right over the Capitol building in Washington, DC. There was many lights in the sky. Now, many people believe that this was a UFO or an extraterrestrial incident, but in fact, it was not. It was German saucers, German craft that were flying over the Capitol building and essentially forcing the hand of the Americans to accept many of these Nazi scientists into their control structures. When many of these Nazi scientists came into America after World War II in Operation Paperclip, they infiltrated into basically every power structure in the United States, government, media, medical systems, basically everything. After World War II, James Forrestal went to Germany to tour many of the research facilities that the Germans had over in Europe, and John F. Kennedy actually accompanied him on those tours. Some believe that Kennedy was actually given information by Forrestal about secret space programs and the UFO phenomena. And near the end of James Forrestal's career, he was also embroiled in many policy struggles within the United States government. He wanted to disclose the UFO phenomenon and the technologies associated with it. It was said that he committed suicide by jumping out of a high-rise hospital that he was staying in at the time of his death, But of course, many people are also believing that he was actually pushed out of the window and in fact assassinated to prevent him from working to disclose these technologies and UFO projects.
They had a really troubled Eisenhower that passed over the torch over to Kennedy, you know, before leaving his famous speech of, you know, beware of the misplaced powers when the industrial military complex, and that only an alert, knowledgeable citizenry can protect our future liberties and freedoms. Kennedy, with his background in Office of Naval Intelligence, and documents show that he was aware all the way back to 1942 of operations happening. Kennedy had Alan Dulles as the CIA director, finding the nefarious activities that Alan Dulles was doing, he eventually fired Dulles and was replaced with John McCone. Because Kennedy was trying to look into these activities, Alan Dulles set up an assassination directive that was revealed in what was called the Byrne Memo, one of James Jesus Angleton's memos that they were attempting to try to destroy all. One intelligence operative was able to pull it, basically saying that Lancer, or the code word for JFK, has been looking into our activities. This we must not allow. This group was working with the group that was with the Treaty of 1955. So when Kennedy put forth a top secret document to the CIA director looking into the MJ-12 and CIA operations with the extraterrestrial, he was silenced with an assassination 10 days later. Years went by. By the way, the Warren Commission, which, you know, Kennedy's famous speech of infiltrated monolithic conspiracy and beware of the dangers of secrecy and secret societies. Ironically, the Warren Commission, who said, you know, we have a lone gunman that did this, was all made up of 33rd degree Freemasons. And afterward, the CIA put out a memorandum to its operatives to use the term conspiracy theorists for anybody questioning. And it's used today as a common ploy to discredit people who are questioning the situation.
The closest we ever came to having technologies and the existence of non-terrestrials go public was actually in 1962-63. I'm told through Alliance sources that President Kennedy was indeed going to make some announcements and also make announcements that he was going to take drastic steps against some of these secret societies that were running the planet. Therefore, they worked through the CIA to have him eliminated. And he was eliminated in a very public way. The cabal came into power in a very public way. They had been controlling things very covertly up until that point. But since then, they have overtly controlled the destiny of the United States.
It's good as a story when you listen to it like that sort of situation, but where are the documents? Where's the actual evidence? I mean, I could just make up something about that sort of scenario myself. So where's the actual credibility, I guess, I'd like to hear. Not saying he's lying or anything, but if you're going to stipulate things like that, that are a little bit out there for a lot of people, you'd want to at least have some sort of backup. I mean, I'd find it very hard to make a claim like that at all without having some sort of backup information about it. But that's just me. Maybe I'm a little cranky old man or some bloody thing. I don't know what you call it. But I just like stuff with some credibility, you know, behind substance. I want substance. That's pretty much it. That's what I want. I want substance. Sounds good. Sounds pretty legit. He looks like he might be damn serious as well. He believes what he's saying. But these aspects can go off course a little bit, you know what I mean? show me the documents. That's all I ask. It's not rocket science, guys. If you're going to pull cards out like that, you're going to have something to back it up. There's no doubt about it.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security.
Did you hear the first bit there? Virtually he's saying that it's been instigated into society, tongue in cheek, for our so-called benefit.
Be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment.
Let's go back and have a listen. I don't know how bloody far back I've got to go here.
Losing the groundwork in Europe, but they were obtaining the more advanced technology. And to save that technology,
I've lost it now.
Program, anyway. Which apparently included bases.
I don't worry about it. Let's go forward a bit. All right, let's
go
continue.
Down to Antarctica and basically root out the Nazi installations that they had.
I'm going to go for about another 15 minutes, and then if anyone would like to call in for 15 minutes, you're welcome. And then I have to break this up because it goes over 2 hours. It's just over 2 hours. Don't want to lose it. So if you want to call in, you're most welcome. And I'll just cut it into two parts.
Built pre and during World War II. The DC flyover was an event that occurred over successive weekends in July of 1952 in Washington, DC. And what had happened was that there was a mass sighting right over the Capitol building in Washington, DC. There was many lights in the sky. Now, many people believe that this was a UFO or an extraterrestrial incident, but in fact, it was not. It was German saucers, German craft that were flying over the Capitol building and essentially forcing the hand of the Americans to accept many of these Nazi scientists into their control structures. When many of these Nazi scientists came into America after World War II in Operation Paperclip, they infiltrated into basically every power structure in the United States, government, media, medical systems, basically everything. After World War II, James Forrestal went to Germany to tour many of the research facilities that the Germans had over in Europe, and John F. Kennedy actually accompanied him on those tours. Some believe that Kennedy was actually given information by Forrestal about secret space programs and the UFO phenomenon. And near the end of James Forrestal's career, he was also embroiled in many policy struggles within the United States government. He wanted to disclose the UFO phenomenon and the technologies associated with it. It was said that he committed suicide by jumping out of a high-rise hospital that he was staying in at the time of his death. But, of course, many people are also believing that he was actually pushed out of the window and, in fact, assassinated to prevent him from working to disclose these technologies and UFO projects.
They had a really troubled Eisenhower that passed over the torch over to Kennedy, you know, before leaving his famous speech of, you know, beware of the misplaced powers when the industrial military complex, and that only an alert, knowledgeable citizenry can protect our future liberties and freedoms. Kennedy, with his background in Office of Naval Intelligence, and documents show that he was aware all the way back to 1942 of operations happening. Kennedy had Alan Dulles as the CIA director, finding the nefarious activities that Alan Dulles was doing, he eventually fired Dulles and was replaced with John McCone. because Kennedy was trying to look into these activities, Alan Dulles set up an assassination directive that was revealed in what was called the Byrne Memo, one of James Jesus Angleton's memos that they were attempting to try to destroy all. One intelligence operative was able to pull it, basically saying that Lancer, or the code word for JFK, has been looking into our activities. This we must not allow. This group was working with the group that was with the Treaty of 1955. So when Kennedy put forth the top secret document to the CIA director looking into the MJ-12 CIA operations with the extraterrestrial, he was silenced with assassination 10 days later. Years went by. By the way, the Warren Commission, which Kennedy's famous piece of infiltrated monolithic conspiracy and beware of the dangers of secrecy and secret societies. Ironically, the Warren Commission, who said, we have a lone gunman that did this, was all made up of 33rd degree Freemasons. And afterward, the CIA put out a memorandum to its operatives to use the term conspiracy theorists for anybody questioning. And it's used today as a common ploy to discredit people who are questioning the situation.
The closest we ever came to having technologies and the existence of non-terrestrials go public was actually in 1962-63. I'm told through Alliance sources that President Kennedy was indeed going to make some announcements and also make announcements that he was going to take drastic steps against some of these secret societies that were running the planet. Therefore, they worked through the CIA to have him eliminated. When he was eliminated in a very public way, the cabal came into power in a very public way. They had been controlling things very covertly up until that point. But since then, they have overtly controlled the destiny of the United States.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go wild.
I don't know. I haven't seen the web.
Number 322.
University is 300 years old this year, and were you to visit its campus, you would see that it still has exotic clubhouses, which look like tombs where Yale's legendary secret societies meet.
The videotape provides a grainy glimpse.
All right, so what we're going to do in about, unless anyone would like to call in, I'm just going to shut it down for the hour mark, and I can pick it back up and just do the next hour. Otherwise, this guest's going to run about 12 minutes over, and I don't want to freaking ruin the whole thing, so I'll just do two segments. So, yeah, let's do that. All right, let's do a song on the way out. I'll catch us, I reckon, on the next one. Let's see if we can... pause the situation here. We're trying to... Alright, I lost a little bit of it there. That's right. I'm not going to scroll back because I'll end up screwing it up. So what we're going to do, we're going to end it and then come back.
Over me, don't leave the keys in the door. I never put my towels on the floor anymore, cause dreams last for so long, even after you're gone. Oh, you love me, and soon you will see you were meant for me, and I. Called my mom and she was out for a walk. I sold a cup of coffee, but I didn't want to talk. So I picked up the paper, it was more bad news. My heart's been broken, my people been used. Put on my coat in the pouring rain. I saw a movie, it just wasn't the same. It was half the old, I was sad, and it made me.